Listening to WAMF LP New Orleans, the voice of the people on 98.3 FM, that's low power, and streaming on the web at WAMF.org. That's right, if you want to listen to us on your computer or on your smartphone, it's WAMF.org. This is the A Community Voice show. A Community Voice is a grassroots community group that fights for justice for low to moderate income families. We are an affiliate of Acorn International and the Flood Forum. Give us a call at 504-941-2852 or visit us on the web at acommunityvoice.org for more information. I am Butler, brought to you by A Community Voice. I am talking today with one of the experts that we actually are fortunate to have right here in our very own world. Yes, one of the pleasures we have in community radio world is to be able to interview outstanding leaders in their fields. Today, we have the honor to hear from Mark Schlefstein, a prize-winning journalist nominated for the Pulitzer in explanatory reporting and author of critically acclaimed books. As a journalist, his work is regularly on the front pages of the Times Picayune newspaper. Brings us the latest there and now here today on what is going on with Floodlandia, the threat to our existence here in New Orleans, along the coast, and more. Thank you, Mark, for your commitment and your great work, and thank you for being here today. Floodlandia is kind of an international concept now. You know, floods are happening in other countries where they never happened before. Floods are happening across our country in places they've never happened before. And they're happening right here in Louisiana, in places they never happened before, and New Orleans. So we'd like to know, can you comment on the current and future flooding in all of these locations, including coastal? What is your analysis of the status of it? Just please comment.
Okay, so we've got, let's break it up into two key pieces here. The one that we're closest to is the area that's surrounded by levees, the levees that were rebuilt after Hurricane Katrina in the New Orleans metropolitan area. And those levees are built finally properly, at least as far as we can tell. At the moment, they're a heck of a lot better than they were prior to Katrina. In the areas where the levee system was most challenged by sea level rise height, water height during Hurricane Katrina, they're twice as high, 32 feet above sea level. In St. Bernard Parish, along those levees and flood walls, 26 feet above sea level along that big storm surge barrier that now cuts off the V that was there that allowed water to build up and move into the industrial canal and into the lower Ninth Ward. The West Bank especially is dramatically improved because their levees were only 40% complete prior to Katrina, and they are now complete. And at 100-year level. And so that's number one. We're in better shape. Now, number two is, what shape are we in? Well, the levees are designed to protect us from what's called the 100-year storm. And a better way of explaining that is that it's a storm that has a 1% chance of occurring in any year. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that there's a 26% chance of a storm surge caused flood overtopping the levee system within the life of a 30-year mortgage. So that's sort of a human-made level of protection, risk reduction that was put there by what I call the devil's bargain between the Army Corps of Engineers and the National Flood Insurance Program. Congress told the Corps and the Flood Insurance Program to get together and figure out a way of how to build the levees back immediately after Katrina, how to redesign them as they were building them to meet that 100-year standard and to have the National Flood Insurance Program continue to give people flood insurance while the levees were being built thereafter at that 100-year level. So what doesn't it mean? Well, it means that if another Katrina hits, we're not protected from overtopping. Katrina was not a 100-year storm. It was a 400-year level storm surge, 28 feet high, the way it hit the Mississippi Gulf Coast. It was 18 to 20 feet high, the way it hit St. Bernard Parish, which is about a 250-year storm. And it actually was about a 150-year storm, the way it hit the levees along the waterfront on Lake Pontchartrain. So we're not protected from the Katrina. There is a chance that there will be future Katrinas. And that's the reality. The risk is less, but it's still there. And the difference in the risk is that for those major events, if it is what we call the big one, you know, a big Category 5 hurricane that's a direct hit on New Orleans, the problem is not as much people, because the assumption is that people will evacuate in advance of such a storm, but for the property is the significant issue that the levee system is actually designed for. It's not designed to protect the people. People are protected by evacuation or by elevation of their buildings above the floodplain, which in this area means evacuation. So that's the area inside the levee system. Now, let's go outside the levee system, and you look at areas like John Lafitte, or areas further down the coast, even at the moment, Homer and some other communities south of Homer, and they are not fully protected by levees, or not protected at all by levees in some cases. The problem they're facing is that a 100-year storm would mean dramatic damage for them, but even more routine flooding is occurring more often, and that's a result of a combination of changes in our weather pattern, more intense rainfall events occurring more often, and also because of sea level rise, what in Louisiana we have to call relative sea level rise, because it's a combination of two things that are going on at the same time. One is the subsidence of the ground on which people are living, which is happening very rapidly in South Louisiana. And then you add to that the elevation of the water that's occurring at a faster rate now because of global warming. And global warming causes heat to occur. The heat is captured by the ocean. And the result of that is that the water molecules themselves expand with heat, and the water actually gets higher. And we're seeing that more and more along the coast. The result of that is that areas like Grand Isle are already beginning to see events occurring much more frequently, where the roads to get in and out of Grand Isle, mostly Louisiana One, are overtopped just by high tides. That's not a problem that is just occurring in South Louisiana. Miami is seeing a similar sort of thing on Miami Beach, with high tides causing water to move up through the rock structure that it's built on and into the streets. So we're not alone in that situation, but it's a real problem. So those are the key things. Then you add to all of that the whole question of what is global warming doing to weather patterns? And what we're seeing here is a pattern that ironically was first picked up by Isaac Klein, and that's a name people may or may not be familiar with. Isaac Klein was one of the first National Weather Service forecasters. Back then it was called the Weather Bureau in New Orleans, and prior to that, he was the forecaster who predicted the 1900 hurricane hitting Galveston in Texas. Unfortunately, there was no way of getting people out of Galveston in time. People didn't really understand what he was talking about, and it was a major flood there. Isaac Klein in 1947 wrote an autobiography of his long life here and pointed out that in 1918 he had published a paper that said that because of the drainage situation in New Orleans, the way that the pumping stations had been put in and the whole area had been drained to allow people to expand into the lakefront area, that you ended up with more dry ground in the inside the New Orleans metropolitan area, fewer trees. You ended up with the cypress forest that was all along the lakefront disappearing. And the result of all that was that you end up with a heat island. And heat island in New Orleans means warmer temperatures, and warmer temperatures cause air to rise. When air rises, it causes more thunderstorms. And he was seeing that there was an increase in rainfall events, even back in 1918, and it's occurred, continued to occur till the present day. And part of that is a result of natural forces, like us cutting down our trees. But the other part of it is a direct result of the increased amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and the fact that the atmosphere itself is warmer and it's able to hold more moisture. And the result of that is that once you've got the moisture there, when you've got heat rising from a city like New Orleans, you end up with thunderstorms being formed or being increased in power over time. That's a start.
As much as I'd like to dig into New Orleans, could you relate this to your analysis of the coast, all of our coast?
Okay, so the coast itself, the wetlands that surround us are disappearing rather rapidly and have been for quite a while. That's not going to stop. The state, of course, has its coastal master plan. And that plan calls for a set level of spending to be spent over 50 years, which is $50 billion. That's a number that the state admits that it basically pulled out of the air. It's a number that they feel they have the ability of actually funding over 50 years. It's not what is needed, and everybody knows it. Even for some of the projects that are included in the master plan are not funded yet. But that plan will help both rebuild wetlands and save wetlands that exist today in some areas, but not all areas. So we're going to continue to lose a significant part of our coastline. But the plan basically directs money for coastal restoration projects, both building wetlands by pumping sediment from the Mississippi River or from other locations offshore or in lakes in to build new wetland areas. Those things are all being directed so that they protect existing levees and communities. And basically areas of wetlands where they're not in front of communities are being left to disappear.
Pearl River.
So Pearl River is actually, that's on the North Shore, and that's a whole different story. There is some wetland loss that's expected in that area, but the Pearl River issues that people are concerned about are rather complicated. There's a plan underway right now in Jackson, Mississippi, to build a new, trying to think of the proper word, it basically a huge lake to store water to reduce flooding in that area and rainfall events. Remember back in 1978, there was a huge flood that flooded about half of Jackson, Mississippi. So there's a real concern about that. So their plan for dealing with that is building this big holding area for water. The problem with doing that is that it captures water that would run downstream, and the result of that is that we'll see less water coming in from the Crow River, fresh water, and into that area. That's a concern to some oyster producers, but it's also a concern about the potential for wetlands to survive in that area along the coast. And there's a lot of unknowns about that. That plan is a plan only at this time. It's not funded, but we'll see what happens with that.
Interesting. You know, you're talking about plans here and plans there. If all of these additional levees are built, say that Representative Graves is talking about, where does that water go?
Well, that's another good question. Let's take an example that's a major proposal that is expected to be built that's in the master plan, and that is a proposal to put gates in the Chef Mentor and Wrigley's passes that would stop storm surge or some storm surge from entering Lake Pontchartrain. The original plan for that is to build a combination of gates and a flood wall that would run basically from the end of the levee system that exists now in New Orleans across that land bridge to Slidell and up north, 10 feet high. And when that thing was first proposed, and it's really been about 15 to 20 years since it was originally proposed, they did studies modeling of what would happen to the water when a storm surge event hit. And what they found out was that building a structure that high along that piece of coast would end up capturing that water and pushing it towards the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and it would dramatically increase the height of storm surge on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. So they abandoned that, and instead what they said is, well, we're going to leave the height of the way things are right now, which is just basically the railroad tracks and the US 90 highway. That's as high as a barrier that we'll have. And then we'll have these gates put in that would block water coming through the 35-foot deep passes, but only rise 2 feet above the water surface. So it will not cause as much water height on the Mississippi coast, only about 3 feet difference. But it will dramatically reduce the flooding that would occur on the North Shore in communities like Mandeville and
Covington.
Thank you. And also would reduce the height of water on the South Shore. And it also would reduce the chance of water hitting areas to the west along the Pass Manchac land bridge and into La Paz. So that would be very helpful. And the amount of damage to the Mississippi coast, they're having to deal with that. They're going to have to deal with that as they move forward. So that's an example. In other areas, though, the other places that will be affected by that is that water will actually rise on the St. Bernard levees a little bit as well. So there will be increases of water in that area too. So it will require either an increase in the height of that levee or a recognition that that levee will just not be as high and that there will be a better chance of water coming over the top of it.
Well, the St. Bernard levees mean a lot to New Orleans, don't they?
They do. And that's actually an issue that's being fought between the East Bank Levy Authority that oversees the levy district in St. Bernard, the Lake Bourne Levy District, and St. Bernard government. The state law that allows, sets up the way the levy districts and the levy authority work. They put a levy authority, they created these regional levy authorities after Hurricane Katrina, but they require the levy authorities to continue to use the existing funding mechanisms that were in place prior to Katrina. What that meant for St. Bernard Parish was that the law says that the levy district must pay for the levy that is in their district. And it doesn't specifically allow other districts to help them pay for that cost. So even though the levies in St. Bernard Parish help New Orleans and Jefferson Parish, they're not specifically allowed to put money into those levies. So that's an issue that they're fighting over right now. St. Bernard, the levy district in St. Bernard, also operates its drainage. And that's about half the cost that it is incurred, unlike what happens in Jefferson Parish or in New Orleans Parish, where in New Orleans, the Sewerage and Water Board is a separate entity that funds itself. And in Jefferson Parish funds its drainage program itself. On St. Bernard, half of the drainage program is actually run by the levy district. So the levy authority is attempting to give the drainage portions of the levy district back to St. Bernard Parish. And St. Bernard Parish says correctly that they don't have enough money to pay for it. So there's a big fight that's going on.
Interesting. I was wondering, since last year the Corps of Engineers was caught allowing a contractor to build a substandard levee in St. Bernard Parish, of course that would affect us as well. Who was it who caught them?
I don't think it was last year that you're talking
about. Is it this year?
No. This was actually much earlier. It was right at the beginning of the construction program. What happened was that, remember I said that there were these tasks that Congress gave the Corps. The first one was start rebuilding the levee system under the old design. Well, the Corps had already decided that it was going to use modern standards for the kind of clays that it could use. But the contractor was allowed to basically take organic material from the swamp right next to the levee and start building the bottom of the levee with it. I went out and saw that. And on the same day that I saw it, I took a picture of the other. We took a picture of the operation going on. Engineering professor from the University of California at Berkeley, Bob B., who was part of an independent forensic investigation team investigating the causes of failure, he also was out at the same place. And he complained to the Corps, and I wrote about it, and it got stopped. So they then use the proper material. Now, there are still arguments going on between levy authority and the Corps over some of the procedures that they use to build, for instance, the flood wall in that area. There are longer-term safety issues. It has to do with, they build those big walls. The walls are built on top of sheet pile, metal piles that are pushed into the ground.
Are those T-walls?
I'm sorry?
Are those T-walls?
No, well, That one is a T-wall. But the sheet piling itself that is underneath that wall, there was an argument between the Corps and the levee authority over what it should be coated with. The levee authority said they needed to coat it with material that would stop it from rusting. And the Corps said that costs too much. We don't believe that it will rust enough over the 50-year lifetime of the project for it to be a problem. And the levee authority said, well, yeah, but they have to stay there for more than 50 years. And our concern is the entire future. You'll have to replace them at some point. So that's an argument that's still going on today.
Well, what can we say? But thank you, Mark, because I believe this is the reason why you continue to win the awards and were nominated for Pulitzer. Out there in the St. Bernard heat, on the levee, that nasty place, and with some Berkeley professors. That's such a great story. I think that really deserves, you know, a whole separate radio show in and of itself, especially the day New Orleans, Louisiana has to St. Bernard take off its hat to Berkeley, California, and save itself from flooding, we hope. Can you give us some more on flooding and what you think the community could do to get involved with better understanding this? I mean, we've been used to, over the decades, looking at storms and even Katrina. Oh, well, it's going to wobble to the right. It's headed to the east, so I think I can weather this one out. And you know how we do. Now it's with flooding. It's like, well, this looks better. You know, we know Sewer and Water Board's lying to us and the Corps' lying to us. But, you know, we did better in the last rain. And we're spending our lives somehow playing with the little ball of yarn like the cat has it out there for us. But the cat's about to get the mouse.
The thing I try to tell people is this, that there will be decisions made by public officials and in coordination with National Weather Service and the Army Corps of Engineers and the levee authorities. And those decisions will be on when people should evacuate. And once that decision is made, people should listen to it. They shouldn't say, oh, gee, they always turn off. Because Katrina showed they don't always turn off. And even if they do turn off, the reality is that storm surge doesn't occur where the center of the hurricane is. It occurs far away from it. It can occur farther away. So people should have their plans right now, since we're already almost at the beginning of the height of the hurricane season. They should already have a plan on what they're going to do, where they're going to go, how they're going to pick up their kids, or their elderly relatives, and bring them out of town in a week. There's no reason to stick around. The other thing that Katrina showed us is that a major flood event can occur, and when it does, it's going to last for a long time because we are a bolt. And what that means is that there will be a lack of services, a lack of everything for quite a while. In New Orleans after Katrina, it was a month or longer just for basic services, and people really didn't get back into their homes for as long as a year. So people should recognize that they're going to be, you know, their own safety is first, what's first at hand. The other thing is flood insurance. One of the problems that I see of this great, wonderful levee system that we have is that the result of building it to the 100-year standard is that some areas that were that required flood insurance prior to Katrina no longer require flood insurance because the elevations aren't required to be as high. There's about a 2-foot dropping of the elevation within the levee system of what is needed to get 100-year protection. But it's not, you know, no matter if paying a flood insurance policy in an area where you're in X, where you're not required to get one, is fairly inexpensive, and it's worth the money, as we saw during Katrina. So people should get insurance whether or not they're in the nets. That's a key thing that should happen. The other thing is to realize that the thing that we learned from the August 5th flood, the rainfall event, is that the mantra that the Sewage and Water Board has used for years about an inch an hour, the pumping stations can handle the first inch during the first hour and then a half inch thereafter. That really is a misnomer. It's a myth. And the reason it's a myth is because that inch an hour is based on certain time frames that really don't occur. And the reality is that even under that process, our drainage system is built to protect us from a 10-year event, not from a 100-year event. And the rainfall events that we've been seeing are much higher than 10 years. And they can occur just in a small neighborhood, as we saw in the August 5th flood, where just a thunderstorm from nowhere pops up, and it sits there for 3 hours, and it dumps 6 to 9 inches of rain. There's no way that the pumping stations can handle that. Even if they had been properly operated, there still would have been flooded. It would not have been as much, it would not have lasted as long, but there would have been flooding. And the reality is that larger storms are going to cause that to be a problem. One of the ways of reminding yourself about that is that, you know, we're looking at all these brand new modern drainage projects that the Corps is building, the SEVA projects uptown and along Florida Avenue. Those are only designed to provide that 10-year level of protection. A 100-year level of protection would require the entire city to be elevated. That's not going to happen in the near term. It might happen in the future. Remember, that is what happened in Galveston after the 1900 flood. They elevated the entire island by 9 to 12 feet. And they were not hit again until last year during Hurricane Harvey for a significant storm. But the thing to remember is that we live in a risky place. We make a decision to live here. And there are reasons to live here. We just have to recognize that part of our process of living here means planning for the event of floods. Part of that is making sure that the Sewage and Water Board is operated properly, which means, as it turns out, as we've learned recently, that you should get to the city council meeting an hour to 3 hours in advance to make sure that you have a seat as opposed to an actor. But in addition to that, when you see something that you think is being done improperly, call someone about it. Call 311, which is the city helpline, or call your council member. They have people in their office that are there to help deal with that thing. So if you see that your little intersection is flooding with every single rain event, and you think it's there's a problem with the collection system, call the Sewage and Water Board first, and at the same time call your council member as well.
Oh, those are great recommendations. Get active, get involved, get out in the streets, get on those phones. You're also saying that the predictions, they're either not there, they're questionable, and that we really need to go by a different core value that we're going to have ourselves, which is make sure all the elderly are evacuated from our neighborhoods because they will flood, most likely, and that, the things that are happening where we're not told summer's going to start a whole month early, for the whole country, by the way, And nobody predicted that, and nobody is saying it's going to happen again next year, but I'm wondering. the sea level is going to rise so much in 25 years that Heat Island is going to be a real island, and that, you know, our other predictions are very questionable as well. So we just don't know. We do know that we need to prepare our homes for floods. And some people have come up with some plans around how you elevate items when you evacuate. Although everybody wants to come back and put in drywall, I'm for putting in wood myself because I think you could just scrub that with vinegar and be okay. I've seen that.
I will tell you my own terrible story. I lived in Lakeview for Katrina, and I saw what was coming in, took a bunch of stuff and put it on the second floor. Unfortunately, it went on the floor on the second floor, and we had 2 feet of water on the second floor. So we lost a bunch of stuff that was in boxes on the second floor as well. So all the good stuff that I didn't care about anymore that was in the attic, it was fine.
Oh, that is tragic. You know, Lakeview, after the storm, though, we never thought we'd be back. I mean, look at it now.
It is back. My house was bought by someone. I gave them the road on the plan. They rebuilt, and they're back in. And it's back at its pre-Katrina value, which is great.
Amazing. You know, and how long would that last if, you know, we continue to ignore the Paris Treaty and, if we continue to just think global warming is some dirty word, like the big C used to be, you know, climate change is now the big C. You know, and the parishes that are most affected, climate change is still a dirty word. And people, the politicians won't address it, and people don't raise it as an issue. It is, though, the elephant in the room.
It is, but Let's remember that even those people who are saying that in some of our coastal communities, they're not saying that they don't recognize the effects of climate change. They're just saying that it's not a result of climate change. The problem that comes out of that is that the what's causing climate change, carbon production, is not going to be properly addressed by them. But some of the other issues about dealing with the effects of climate change are most definitely being addressed by them in terms of supporting the coastal restoration programs, finding other ways of dealing with how to live along the coast. Those things that they're very much familiar with and are dealing with. How we get to that point, I think the reality is that over time, people will finally understand that there is this direct link between carbon and elevated temperatures. I don't know that it will come quick enough to help us dramatically over the next 50 years, which is a problem. But more and more of among those people who believe that our future is going to be in accommodation because there's just not going to be an ability to deal with at least the effects of climate change that are already out there from the levels of carbon that have already been emitted through our atmosphere. Even if we start today and stop producing more carbon, the carbon's already in the atmosphere. We've got to figure out ways of getting it out as well. And that hasn't happened.
Well, that's an interesting concept. Of course, here we are in what is considered one of the most liberal cities in the country. And our city council just voted in a gas plant that will continue to depend on fossil fuels and have its own emissions instead of solar, wind, any other clean energy. And it's really an unnecessary plant because that's our problem is not a lack of energy. It is that the infrastructure is so poor because we have given our money to energy with a gun at our heads, and they have not used it to repair the infrastructure. They've just passed it on to stockholders.
The interesting thing about energy in our role in your system is that we are a very small community. We're a city, basically, as opposed to the other operating corporate companies of Entergy. And Entergy in New Orleans is just for the city of New Orleans, and it's very small. The city consciously made a decision not to buy out Entergy back in the 90s when it had the opportunity, based on promises that the company made. I don't normally cover Entergy, so I'm not an expert on the plant, other than the thing that I saw that was not addressed in the decision was the thing that I actually saw was the more problematical issue rather than the use of carbon, the natural gas, and that was the fact that they're going to be drawing water out of the ground, which will increase subsidence. That I found to be significant issue that was really not addressed by the council. The question of, adding another plant to Entergy, being natural gas, that's something that should have been addressed in the context of the broader issue of where is Entergy getting all of its power from? And why is New Orleans being required to deal with the issue of having to have its own power plant as opposed to being able to use power that's being generated or bought by other pieces of the system? Unfortunately, that's not an issue for the council as such, other than vetoing the plant. It could veto the plant, but it would still have to deal with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which makes those regional decisions involving multiple individual pieces of
company. Yeah, FERC, kind of a problem. Along the lines of Entergy's and Entergy's gas plant out there in New Orleans East, have you seen any reasonable attempts at solar or any of the other alternative energies in our area?
Actually, New Orleans was sort of a hot spot for solar after Katrina, because in areas like the Lower Ninth Ward and the Upper Ninth Ward, where you had NGOs building houses, they were putting them solar. So that was sort of a benefit of that. And for a while, the state's program where it was giving reductions for solar installation also helped with that as well. South Louisiana has failed to take into account the potential for development of solar arrays in open areas, and failed to take into account the potential for using wind power, even using wind power on abandoned wind areas.
Brilliant. Finally, something we could get out of it.
Texas is doing that.
Yeah. We're doing
it. Texas.
Along the lines of what we can do, a while back, and this has been a few years, I think it was Wagner and Ball making a presentation before the Planning Commission about how to put in non-permeable concrete-type sidewalks. I don't know if the Planning Commission has a role in doing anything besides what they do, but they did have a progressive idea about how to deal with some of the water as it comes down. It seems like that kind of got lost along the way.
I think if you look at the cities living with water plan, whatever it's called, I think some of those things are in there. I know that there was use of permeable sidewalk material in the Naked Bike Foundation area in Willamette. The amount of water that those things suck up is just so small compared to what power needs are. And we get 60 inches of rain a year, so it's not holding water that much. What that plan, though, the broader pieces of that plan are trying to figure out areas where water can be stored through rainfall gardens and things like that. That's probably a better potential way of getting some process started to start capturing water. And the other thing is trying to figure out the long-term plan for dealing with the drainage ditches that we have, the canals, to make them more livable and to make them more into areas that would store more water. One of the big failures that I see of the CELA program was, like everything else after Katrina, it was started in the Great Rush. And so the Corps of Engineers did it in the unusual benefit cost method. And the fastest way and the cheapest way of doing those things was building these big underground chambers to hold water for moving water to through the system. What was missing was the development of the area underneath. Above those concrete structures basically make them look like the sunken gardens along Canal Boulevard in Lakeview. If that had been done throughout the city with all the red sealer projects, just look how much more water storage there would have been in the city for rainfall events. Those are the kinds of things that need to be done. The other major failure that I see after Katrina was much more direct, and that was there was a great rush to get people back in their homes, which was a correct thing to do. But in doing so, the city government at the time bent over backwards to look at individual homes that had been damaged during Katrina and declared them less than 50% damaged. And if they had been 50.1% damaged, they would have been required to elevate to the base flood elevation, which would have meant that many of the homes that were flooded in the August 5th flood were in areas that were allowed to rebuild early and weren't declared to be damaged to that level. And so they were still built on slab or low enough so that they would be over the new base flood elevation. My house is an example of that. But when we built, they decided that it was only 47% damage. We basically took it down to studs and sign because it needed to be done. It was not 47% damage. It was more than 50%. So the people who rebuilt it built it on the exact same way. So the bottom floor is at 6 feet below sea level. I don't think that they're using that bottom floor room that we had used as a bedroom. I don't think they're using it as living space, but to be honest, I don't know. So that's an issue that the city had a great opportunity to do a significant amount of elevation with and missed the boat. Part of that was a result of the reality, which was at that time the it wrote home program was in the yellow for $25,000 to $30,000 for elevated homes. It was a year after it started that it started issuing much greater amounts for increased cost of compliance.
Yes, we still have problems with road home today. And
oh, yeah.
If it had been driven by, you know, the people and what the people needed at the time, it would have been probably saved a lot more money and done a lot more good.
Well, the bigger problem with road home, the way it was designed, was it was designed, again, to get people back in homes as quickly as possible. And it was designed to recognize that the people who could get back to their homes the most quickly were those who had money. Which meant that, you know, people like you were eligible for grants. And because they had value in their homes, they matched the requirements. People in the Wilmette Ward were largely only eligible for an increased cost of compliance because the majority of them had flood insurance, but the flood insurance matched the value of their homes. So they weren't eligible. And there was a failure of leadership to recognize what was important to get people back. And you look at that in aftermath, and it was even worse than that, because even under the FEMA program, people in Roanoke Ward couldn't get back to their homes for a much longer period than other places, because FEMA required that you had water, electricity, and sewer. And FEMA was in Roanoke was flooded twice, and then Entergy went bankrupt and decided that it was only going to repair areas that it knew it was going to get money from. So Roanoke went to the end of their line, and the city made conscious decisions. The first one was to start tearing things down more quickly there, which got stopped. But the others were to delay the reinstallation of water and sewer in those areas longer, much longer than in other areas.
Oh, yeah. Our 8-point chapters in the Lower Nine were absolutely integral to the fights around all this and had to picket sewer and water board and go to the city council. And it was pretty endless, the fights around Katrina, just for one thing after the next. Like you said, electricity, water, so you could get a trailer because they would put a trailer down there if you didn't have certified water, it had to be certified. But some of it was like the water was passing right through the neighborhood from the water plant, so it was obviously the same water everybody else was getting. I mean, it was an endless struggle after Hurricane Katrina, and when you think about both the amount of help that New Orleans got from volunteers, which was legion, American people just heroes, to the staggering lack of help from the institutions that, you know, you pay taxes and utility bills to. It seems that people might look to the future and think that we're going to get the same level of help again. What do you think?
No. We're not. And you can see that. Look what's happened in Puerto Rico. Look what's happened in Houston. Congress has made a conscious decision that it's not going to do what it's done in the past, which is give out blank checks. And so that's going to be a problem moving forward, at least in the near term. So at least for the next 10 to 20 years, I would expect to see that the kinds of aid that we have seen in the past are going to be much smaller. I mean, you look at what we got $120 billion of federal aid, all told, $120 billion. That includes the levies and CEO and all the other things. And you're not going to see that in Houston. We're talking about maybe $60 billion. You didn't see that in Sandy. That's the reality.
Are we all going to have to live in houseboats?
I don't know. There is one in the Make It Right program. There's a house that's built on a mast, and its bottom is styrene foam. And so if there were additional flooding, you inside the house, house. You can hit a lever and it unhooks the house from the mast and it can rise up on the mast.
Will it stay there? What's going to get banged into it?
Yeah. Well, it'll be on the mast, so it won't go anywhere.
Right. But, I mean, there's stuff floating, right?
Well, no, yeah, stuff will probably run into it.
So. Other barges and things left on the canal.
Or something like that for the industrial canal.
I don't know. I was just hoping that there was a solution for housing, though. Do you have one?
No, I don't. I'm always looking, and I'm hoping that the state, you know, the irony is that who would ever have thought that Louisiana would be an international leader in flood control? And it is. And it's apt to become that. But it's still running, and it's going to be a long, long process.
Do you think the small houses, have we gotten small houses instead of FEMA trailers?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that whole argument was sort of silly. Then people would be stuck in small houses. Well, you know, we'd be sitting here 10 years later watching houses being torn down left and right and replaced with houses that nobody could afford. So I think the trailers were a good idea, but they just weren't
healthy.
Well, they made a major mistake with the formaldehyde.
They certainly did.
And we had to take them off. So it was a real problem.
I would like to introduce you to Reverend Bell, who's a leader with the A Community Voice chapter in the Lower Ninth Ward, working on the subject of explosions. Reverend Bell, can you tell us about the explosions? Because are they a flood threat?
Well, it probably would be, because most of the time when you hear the explosion, it vibrates the houses. They're close to where you could hear it. You can really go out the house, you can't see it, but you can hear it. But it shakes the foundation. Some people have cracks in their wall. If it's cracking walls in the foundation of pillars, the lev is right next to it. So someone needs to check the lev and see if these vibration explosion booms is shaking the lev up. Because once the lev is weak and you get a spurge of water, you got the lev busted. And they have been seeking already. People already say after when it rained, they could see some seepage coming from the levees. So the levees could be getting weak due to the booms. And you don't know when they're going to happen. You're just in your house, you hear a boom. You go outside, you can't find it. And it's all the way from Lower Ninth Ward to Franklin around the lakefront. Those people hearing in that area. French Quarter, close to the French Quarter, they hand it. So it's the long range, all the way to Chalmette. So it's a big range of the noise.
This is the first I'm hearing about it.
Yeah, off and going, but it seems that nobody would want to help to try to find out where it's coming from. But we haven't structure damage. I mean, I got splits to the rear of my house. They could see where it's the sheetrock separating, not due to old age, because that's been redone over since Katrina. Mm-hmm. But it's cracking. I mean, and not just me. The closer you get to the levee, the more people have reported damage to their house. Hopefully they can find out what's going on. Yes, sir.
I know at one time the Community Voice chapter called on Sheriff Guzman to have him call attention to the governor and to Congressman Richmond. Were you in that meeting with Congressman Richmond?
Yes, I was in that meeting with Congressman Richmond with some more of Community Voice people. He took down the report. Nothing happened. I mean, we still hadn't heard nothing. Yeah. So, you know, we're doing everything we can, even the officials. We asked for Senate investigation, asked to coordinate me. Court never met with us. Our new elected official never met with us. As always, you're on a back burner. So they're going to wait until, you know, you had an earthquake in the middle of the Gulf, close to Grand Isle. You had an earthquake close to Honduras. That's is close to Louisiana. So something going on, and if you keep having small little earthquakes and booms, the damage is going to happen, it'll be too late. I mean, somebody can investigate and see what's going on. You know, maybe the ride at nighttime in the air, see what's coming. Somebody know where it's coming from, but nobody's saying nothing. But we have a problem with it. And so, you know, you had Katrina did damage. Now you got booms or big loud noise doing damage. So, you know, what is it? I mean, you know, is that it scared the kids. Yeah, people, they shake. You know, kids hit a big boom. It was so loud one night till we thought it was like thunder and there's one no clouds. It was that loud about 3 weeks ago. It was loud to the whole house was rumbled. Like I said, you have an earthquake, so I'm not a geologist or nothing but a scientist, but you have an earthquake close to Louisiana. Something is going on. So I'm trying to wonder what they're going to wait until we have a tsunami and water come up and it's float.
The earthquakes that would occur in South Louisiana probably actually won't make much noise because it's sediment. Mm-hmm. It's not rock.
Right.
It's more slippage of blocks of sediment than anything else. And it's a bit slower process that people would see. Although there was that one, this was a 3.9.
I think the one was a 6.7. That was really big.
No, there's never been anything that.
Okay, well, I thought I was 6.7. If we have 6.7, we'd be on the water.
If there was a 6.7, we would have.
You know, and we never had that. And I just noticed that two earthquakes within a 6 month period.
Yeah.
I mean, is anybody checking this out and finding out what's going on? Or we're going to wait till the water that's, hey, we got some. It'll be too late.
Do we have anyone who checks the levees? I mean, besides the Corps?
Well, the levee authority.
Maybe that's who we should meet with, too.
Well, you could meet with them there. I see them driving. I don't see them checking it, but maybe we could because they do a lot of driving on the levee. I don't think about checking. We need reports. Somebody needs to come say, okay, we did our report. This is our finding. You know, we didn't found nothing. But everybody sit back and we asking. We out there begging mercy. Find out what's going on. We got, you know, I've been in the lower Ninth Ward since 1977. I'm not going nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And I've been there since 77. I raised 3 kids there and raising grandchildren. But we want to know what is our future with it. We didn't have that before Katrina. Now, look like after Katrina, the aftermath is worse than going through Katrina. So people lost their lives. Lost, you know, you rebuild. Some people still haven't got back. Some of them died. But how can you rebuild and you're having more problems? You're having the levees could be getting weak. We don't know if a barge is going to come and hit again. We don't know this. We don't know if they secure with cameras, they could see what's coming through that intercoastal canal. Because if not, you could have the same thing. A barge would come and boom, hit the levee, we'd get flooding again.
What do you think about that? Would some extraction or fracking cause that kind of an explosion?
Well, there isn't a fracking south of the lake. There's no. Remember what we're sitting on top of. Okay, we're sitting on top of sediment. There's no rock. The rock is much, much deeper. And it's too deep for fracking. You know, fracking is a particular kind of rock shale. And there's no shale underneath us. There's shale north of I-12 and much farther north towards Mississippi. And there's shale way up in the northwest part of the state. So there has not been any fracking. There's been drilling for oil, but not in the city of Willis. And indeed in Lake Pontchartrain, there was any active oil drilling going on at all. There's certainly not any fracking.
What about extraction?
Extraction.
Do we have anything?
Well, I mean, just oil, but that's, you know, I mean, think about that for a second. Nothing under the city. There's no active, closest wells would be like in Lake Floyd.
And that's right to the south, I-55. Towards LaPlace to Hamlet.
Well, there's wells all
up in
that area.
Yeah, I see that well.
There's wells up in that area, and then there are wells along to the west,
right?
To the east of St. Bernard.
Okay.
So that's where you would find them. I don't know of any others that are active. There used to be several that were in Lake Pontchartrain. There are some that are popping, but they're just popping. It's not, they're not doing anything that would increase the flow or anything.
Have you ever heard about them using explosives to go fishing?
Yeah, but not around here.
Would it create the same effect?
Well, it depends on where you get it.
I mean, in the industrial canal or in the Mississippi.
Why would you do that in the industrial canal?
There are fish in there, though.
Yeah, but not that many.
Just crazy things.
And that would, somebody would use dynamite in the industrial canal. Believe me, the Coast Guard would be there in 10 minutes. Because you've got, you do have the Corps of Engineers staff that's up there.
This is always at night.
Always at night.
Yeah, but they're there 24. And they're there 24 hours during the day because
lock is open.
The lock is used.
Would the Navy and Belcher's Navy, would they have some type of spoons going on by the water? That's a Navy base.
I do not know. I know that the Belchase planes do play over downtown New Orleans all the time, but they're not, even them, they're not flying at Mach 2 speeds that they cause.
What about the lakefront airport? Sometimes they fly low.
Yeah.
In our area.
There are small planes mostly, there are some jets.
You can see how difficult this subject is.
Yeah, I'm trying
to get a handle on it because there's actual damage to homes, so we think damage to the levees, but if somebody's just driving by in a truck, they might not be able to see it.
My assumption would be that it's got to be something on the ship, or it's got to be something like initial surge ground. Or some other industry that's in the industrial canal.
There's all different other locations too. You know, they had them uptown for a while. And
right, it was different areas, uptown, Legion Field, the Tremaine area, the Legion Field in Claiborne, the Robinson. We had a meeting and I was really amazed that it went that far. I thought it was just pulling on, but it's all the way up to the Legion Field and Tremaine area. People had recorded knowing that they heard the same noise we was hearing. So when we had the meeting, that so many people came out and said, well, yeah, I've been hearing it for a while. It just didn't start. It's been here about a year or 2 years. So it's getting to the point that you sit down and you hear it, boom, and it's like a vibration. You go outside, you don't know where it's coming from. So you could run to the levee. Something comes from the levee, but you could go there, you don't see nothing. So to me, it's like an explosion. Like a big explosion. It was so bad 3 weeks ago, I thought it was thunder, and I looked outside and there's no cloud. This is ridiculous. But we can't get help. I mean, we're trying to get help before damage done. And we're concerned about the levee, because even though they have raised the levee up with the concrete, but if vibration like that is the houses, who checking the levee to see if they safe? You get a cat, two or three, we gone. Not a good thing.
Maybe you can get us some information.
I will check.
I know you talk to the right people in the right places.
I do.
And you tend to go out on these levees yourself, though. That might be just the help that we need. You know, this has been a tremendous conversation with one of the greatest experts that we've got in the country, probably internationally. We're just very honored to have you here with us, Mark